You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tonight after 7, it's this week's edition of Reveal. Powered by the internet, the sex trade is reaching into all corners of the country. Reveal looks at the hidden places, real and virtual, where people are exploited for sex. That's tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network. First, the U.S. has one of the largest militaries on the planet, but some historians say that past administrations haven't always made the best use of U.S. troops, and those decisions have harmed people at home and around the world. Our next guest argues that in the last a little over a century, the United States has fought 3 unnecessary wars, and those wars have a lot of common threads that can reveal what can go wrong with U.S. foreign policy. David R. Contesta is a professor of history at Chestnut Hill College in Philadelphia. His new book is called America's Needless Wars, Cautionary Tales of U.S. Involvement in the Philippines, Vietnam, and Iraq. He joins us now. David, welcome to Central Time.
Yes, thank you very much. Glad to be here.
We'll take a look at those particular wars in just a moment, but as you looked back over the last 100-some years, what criteria did you use to assess whether a war was needless?
Well, there's a whole body of argument about just wars, and I looked into that to some extent. And I think at base, the argument is that the war needs to be absolutely necessary to protect the nation, the national security, and as a last resort, when there are no other possibilities, no other alternatives.
And the recent war in Iraq, people are still fresh in people's minds, the Vietnam War. Let's look back at the one in the Philippines. We're talking about 120 years ago or so. Can you bring us up to date a little bit on the history of what happened?
Well, it was almost inadvertent, and it was really unintended. The United States went to war with Cuba in 1898, and in the war planning, the United States was supposed to attack the Spanish Pacific Fleet in Manila Bay. And this was entirely successful. Admiral Dewey destroyed the Spanish Pacific Fleet and lost just one man in the process. And then he didn't know what to do. He didn't know whether he should go into Manila or not, and he called for troops, and they went in. The Filipinos had already been rebelling against Spain. They wanted their independence. We went in and, in effect, said, "You're not going to be independent. We're going to take over." And they fought us. They engaged in a guerrilla war against the United States for 3 years. We lost 4,200 men, the Filipinos about 36,000 soldiers, and over 200,000 civilians were killed in the Philippines and lost their lives there. There was a lot of opposition to it. There was a lot of protest. This is something that all three of these wars have in common. They were not popular. There was considerable protest, and I think that tells us something. There wasn't the overwhelming support for them as there was, let's say, for World War II or World War I, at least once it got going.
I wanted to look at some of the common themes here between that war in the Philippines, the U.S. entry in the war in Vietnam, and then the war to overthrow Saddam Hussein, the second war, if you will, in Iraq. You say that 3 common themes that emerge in how we got into these wars are ignorance, arrogance, and fear. Let's start with ignorance. How did that play out in these 3 different wars?
In all 3 of these wars, either the government did not have access to information, details about the culture of the people, the history of the people, the language of the people, or if they did, they ignored it. If we take the Philippines, for example, there was really nobody in the United States who knew anything about the Philippines. And in fact, President McKinley, at one point when he was interviewing a person he might appoint as consul there, said, "I couldn't tell you where they were. The Philippines were within 2,000 miles. And incredibly, in Vietnam, and Robert McNamara, who was Secretary of Defense for both Kennedy and Johnson, said that there wasn't anybody in the U.S. government who was an expert on Vietnam. We didn't know much about Vietnam's history. We should have known, for example, that the Vietnamese had resisted outside force attempts to take them over for 1,000 years. They had resisted the Chinese for 900 years. They resisted the French for about 80 years. They resisted the Japanese, and they weren't about to knuckle under to the United States. They wanted to have their independence. Now, in the case of Iraq, there were people in the State Department and elsewhere in the government who knew a lot about Iraqi culture and history and who tried to warn the Bush administration about this. Even Colin Powell, who was Secretary of State, famously talked about the pottery barn rule. If you break it, you own it. And Powell was somewhat dubious, although he was a good soldier and ultimately went on and testified in the UN. So ignorance is a real problem in each one of these situations, circumstances.
Talking to David Contasta, his new book is America's Needless Wars, Cautionary Tales of U.S. Involvement in the Philippines, Vietnam, and Iraq. So, David, that was ignorance. You say arrogance is another common theme in leading us into unnecessary wars.
Right. Arrogantly thinking that the United States could prevail in all these wars. We didn't really need to know much about those countries, or that the people actually were no match for American troops, that we could go in and work our will. And with the Philippines, there's this real racism, a belief in Anglo-Saxon superiority or the superiority of white people, that we had the right to go in there. There were terrible racial slurs used against the Filipinos. We used the N-word, or a lot of the troops there used the N-word towards them, or called them goo-goos, which was another racial slur. And there was an assumption in Vietnam, too, that we could obviously win there, could win there quickly, and they were an underdeveloped country, and there was no way we weren't going to prevail. And there's the same arrogance about Iraq, that it's going to be a cakewalk, that we're going to be welcomed as liberators. I think at one point there was a suggestion that the Iraqis would welcome us as the French did when we came into Paris in 1944. Well, the French had been occupied by the Germans, and of course they were going to welcome us, but the Iraqis saw us as invaders, interestingly enough.
And then part three, fear as a common thread.
Yeah, sometimes unreasoning fear. Fear, I think, in several levels and several ways. Often government tried to make the American people fearful, that if we didn't do something in the Philippines or in Vietnam or Iraq, there would be dire consequences from that. Or maybe there were some challenges, but the fears were, in fact, exaggerated. In the case of the Philippines, the warning was, well, if the United States didn't go into the Philippines, some other country would take over and they would have access to the Chinese market and we would not. The United States could have, though, gone along with Filipino independence, offered a benign protectorate. And by the way, the Chinese were extremely poor in 1898, 99, 1900. There was no way that we were going to open up the Chinese market from the Philippines. And of course, in Vietnam, there was the domino theory that if Vietnam went communist, then Indonesia would go communist, and Japan would go communist, and some people even said it would creep across the Pacific Ocean and be in California before we knew it. And of course, in Iraq, there was the fear, supposedly, of WMD, weapons of mass destruction, that turned out not to exist.
And another common theme related to fear, accusations that the president's ruling party, if they didn't intervene militarily, would be soft on, you name it, Spanish imperialism, communism, terrorism.
Yeah, well, especially soft on communism during the Vietnam War. And it was not only one party against the other, but sometimes within the same party, there are criticisms. The Republicans were more likely to do that in the late 1940s and into the 50s because they'd been out of power for 20 years, and they wanted to use the communist card against the Democrats. When Mao Zedong took over in China, the battle cry was, who lost China? And the answer, of course, would be Truman and the Democrats, and that continued. Kennedy played that card, interestingly enough, against Eisenhower. He said Eisenhower had lost Cuba to the communists, or that Eisenhower had allowed a missile gap to exist between the United States and the Soviet Union. In fact, the missile gap didn't exist. People who opposed the war in Iraq, of course, were accused of being unpatriotic, of not supporting the country, and so forth. So that's commonly something that occurs in these circumstances.
Talking to David Contasta, author of the book America's Needless Wars, Cautionary Tales of U.S. Involvement in the Philippines, Vietnam, and Iraq. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Do you think these wars we're talking about, the Philippines about 120 years ago, the Vietnam War, or Iraq, were unnecessary, were mistakes on the part of American policymakers? Why not? What do you think led us into these wars? Do you think we've learned lessons from them, or what lessons do you think we should learn? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation now with David Contasta. He's a historian and writer of the new book, America's Needless Wars, Cautionary Tales of U.S. Involvement in the Philippines, Vietnam, and Iraq. You can join in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. When do you think U.S. involvement in a war is justified? What crosses the line into needless wars? Iraq, Vietnam, Philippines, do you think they were mistakes, things we shouldn't have done? What lessons should we learn? Call 800-642-1234. We'll go to our callers now. Frank is on the line in Onalaska. Frank, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. Is my understanding of these wars, each were predicated on a alleged assertive act of aggression, the attack on the Maine, which may not have been a true blow, explosion, the attack on the Gulf Tonkin, of course.
Line's breaking up there, Frank, but I think we take your point. The alleged attack on the Maine, which turns out probably not to have been by the Spanish, starting the Spanish-American War, Gulf of Tonkin resolution, Vietnam, and then I think he was going to say the link between 9/11, the alleged link between 9/11 attacks and Iraq. David, can you talk about that common theme?
Yes, I can. Of course, there was no connection between 9/11 and Iraq, and I think close to 46-47% of the American people think that there was, because they've asked themselves, well, why would we go to war with Iraq if there weren't some link? And of course, the caller did talk about the Gulf of Tonkin resolution that was supposedly based on attacks against the United States in the Gulf of Tonkin. And the Philippines, interestingly enough, the McKinley administration accused the Filipinos of starting the war. In fact, General Otis, who was in charge of the troops there, stationed them very close to the Filipino lines. The Americans shot some sentries on the Filipino side, and some general firing opened up. The McKinley administration then accused the Filipinos of starting a war. So, yes, I think in all three cases, there are accusations of the other side starting the conflict.
Frank, thanks for that call. Before we go back to our callers, David, wanted to talk about the role of the media. We've talked about policymakers so far. You say that in each of these cases, the media also failed in its job, or in at least one case, saw its job as promoting war in the Spanish-American War.
Yeah, in the Spanish-American War, the Yellow Press, the New York World, the New York Journal, actually fanned the flames of war. And generally, the press was supportive of the War of the Philippines, at least in the beginning. And I think in all three cases, the media, would have been print media back in 1898, did not ask the kinds of hard, serious questions that had to be asked. In Vietnam, the media went along till about 1963, 1964. We become involved in Vietnam in 1946. It was sort of covered like World War II. Very few questions were asked. Once the war starts going badly, particularly in 67 and 68, the media does question it. In Iraq, Judith Miller actually writes a number of articles for the New York Times supporting the American point of view in the Iraq War, and the Times actually apologized for that later. So I would say that the print media and electronic media of various kinds didn't really question the Iraq War all that much until it became obvious that there were no WMD and the war started going badly.
We'll go back to our callers now. Steve is with us in Montreal in Iron County. Steve, hi.
Good morning. Good afternoon. For another look at our involvement in Viet Minh, read The Winking Fox by Major Rene DeForno, who is U.S. Army on boots on the ground in 45, taking the surrender of the Japanese, working with the Viet Minh, who did not wish to be a French colony. Stressing that, did not wish to be a French colony. What did our government do but support our ally?
Yes, in fact, that's...
So, Reed, if you can find a copy of that...
Gotcha, Steve. Go ahead, David.
I do cover that in the book, and it's interesting that Ho Chi Minh on September 2nd, 1945, which is the day the Japanese formally surrendered, declared the independence of Vietnam, and he emerged from the war. He had fought the Japanese. He emerged as a war hero. He quoted from the American Declaration of Independence, and he also asserted national self-determination. In fact, I think he was at Versailles back in 1919, was familiar with what Wilson was saying. There were some officers of the OAS at the time Ho Chi Minh is proclaiming independence. They were invited to a banquet that evening. That's the precursor of the CIA. Ho Chi Minh even had the band playing the Star-Spangled Banner. And it's interesting that Ho wrote several letters to President Truman and to the State Department asking for American support and friendship. And it's interesting that Roosevelt, before he died in April of 1945, had been against the resumption of these European colonies in Asia. Of course, Roosevelt was dead. Truman was shocked at becoming president of the United States. The Truman administration didn't even bother to respond to these letters from Ho Chi Minh. And there's a parallel situation with the Philippines that I'll talk about if I have a chance.
Just briefly, yeah, what is that parallel?
Emilio Aguinaldo, who was in charge of the Filipino revolutionaries, sent an emissary to Washington, D.C., a man named Agoncillo, who actually went to talk to President McKinley, asking for the support and friendship of the United States towards the Philippines. And McKinley, in a sense, waved him off. He said, you can go to Paris and talk to the peace commissioners there if you want to. They were deciding what the terms were going to be at the end of the Spanish-American War. And they refused to see him also. So in both of those cases, the hand of friendship was offered to the United States, and we rejected it in both the Philippines and in Vietnam.
Steve, thanks for your call. We're talking to David Contasta. His new book is America's Needless Wars, Cautionary Tales of U.S. Involvement in the Philippines, Vietnam, and Iraq. Back to our callers with Daniel in Toma. Daniel, hi.
Yeah, you say we're not supposed to be Iraq war. You forget about the airplane that they knocked out of the sky in 1995. You forget about the meeting they had between all the Arabs over there about how to attack the United States. We tried to stay out of that war. And you talk about the mass destruction weapons. You remember Oliver North on his court-martial? He, Iran, scandals, he was stripping those mass destruction missiles over there against Congress, instead of down to the conference.
Daniel, thanks for the call. Those weapons went to Iran, not Iraq, as I recall from the Iran-Contra scandal. But the connections between David, Iraq, and terrorism and plots against the United States, what was alleged? What do we know?
Well, it was alleged that one of the 9/11 operatives or terrorists, in fact, met in Prague with operatives from Saddam Hussein. That was later proven to be untrue. And there was no reason that Hussein was going to encourage or in any way support al-Qaeda. He was a secularist, a member of the Ba'ath Party. That's the last thing, in fact, that they wanted. And, in fact, none of the 9/11 terrorists who were involved with the Twin Towers and with the Pentagon and with the crash landing in Pennsylvania, none of them was in fact from Iraq or had any connections with Iraq.
Thanks for the call, David. Want to talk about lessons learned, David. You quote Mark Twain, who the quote, I'm paraphrasing, something like, history doesn't repeat itself, but it often rhymes. What can we learn from these three wars for our future foreign policy?
Well, I think there are a lot of things that we can learn. We need to be very sure that the wars are absolutely necessary, that there's an existential threat to the United States, and it has to be an absolute last resort. We need to be as well informed as we possibly can about the countries in question who seem to be potential threats or potential enemies. We can't any longer make the sort of mistake that we did about the Philippines or about Vietnam or even Iraq. There was no willingness to listen to experts in the State Department who knew what was likely to occur, that sectarian warfare was likely to break out in Iraq if we went in there, which, of course, is exactly what happened. Al-Qaeda did not exist in Iraq at all until the American invasion, and, of course, that leads to ISIS, interestingly enough, and that's still a terrible threat in both Iraq and Syria. So I think we need to take a hard look at what we're doing. It's really interesting to me that we're the most powerful country in the world, the wealthiest power country in the world. We have more than half of the top universities in the world, and we have experts in the State Department and our intelligence bureaus who know everything almost imaginable about the rest of the world. We don't necessarily pay attention, and we need to.
We'll leave it there for now. David, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You're very welcome.
We've been talking to David Contasta. He's a professor of history at Chestnut Hill College in Philadelphia. Join us to talk about his new book. It's called America's Needless Wars, Cautionary Tales of U.S. Involvement in the Philippines, Vietnam, and Iraq. Still time for you to share your thoughts on some of the issues he's raised. You can do that over at the Central Time Facebook page. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.